You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Oh wow, it's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Let's get into it indeed, and it is thanks to MOTAT indeed, and Marcus Jones is with us indeed in the studio.
Indeed.
Let's maybe start with the fire. So, I mean, if anyone has seen the news recently or heard anything or seen Instagram or whatever it is, however you get your information these days, people would know that there is currently, still right now, a fire burning.
There is.
In the Sky City Convention Centre.
A little fire. Massive conflagration, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I know you're not necessarily a fire expert, but I was wondering if you could tell us anything at all, even a little bit of information about perhaps the materials that are...
So, a very, very little bit, because I think the details are still a bit sketchy about what's happening and what actually caused the fire. What I could get from the news this morning was there was... it was started by someone with an unattended blowtorch. He went off for a smoke break, left his blowtorch on. Maybe not surprisingly,
caught fire. I don't know if I'm convinced about this. I'm sure that you can't actually leave a blowtorch on.
I don't know.
I'm calling scapegoat. I'll say it.
Okay. Well.
Okay, but a blowtorch and yes. What? Okay, so there's fire that comes out of a blowtorch.
Okay, so what I've figured out, maybe figured out, is that this roof is made, there's a bitumen layer on the roof, and that is there for waterproofing. It's commonly used for waterproofing. There was also the layer was bitumen and with straw and plywood all sort of compressed together. And
so
all of those
literally
things,
straw burning right now.
Well, that's maybe.
Sounds like some Three Little Pig shit, right?
But a straw fire is not. I mean, this is probably bitumen that is, and anything else that is there. I mean, there's been rumours of other things that are there that I don't want to sort of comment on. Mm. But
do we know what bitumen is?
So bitumen is this. It's this sort of sticky black, very viscous, liquid, semi-solid sort of form of petroleum. You can hold it in your hand. It basically feels like a solid. It is often used, I mean, it's used on roads an awful lot. It's often used on roofing as a waterproof layer. Obviously, it's an oil product. It's carbon-containing. It's going to be combustible, yeah? And it will combust. It will actually, the fire point, in other words, the lowest temperature where it actually catches fire and burns is about 180 degrees C. So if it is a blowtorch, much hotter than 180 degrees C. So possibly that could be an ignition source.
Okay.
An interesting thing I figured out when looking at information about bitumen is that when you're fighting a bitumen fire, you don't want to use direct water jets. Now, we've seen pictures on the news of, you know, the firemen, and I'm not saying they're not doing it correctly, but I've seen lots of direct water jets. Mm. But it said, you know, the safety and how to fight fires, bitumen fires, it said you avoid direct water jets because you get frothing in the bitumen, which basically sprays hot bitumen everywhere and therefore sprays the fire.
Exacerbates the fire.
Yeah, so there are other methods apparently for fighting. I'm sure they all know this and I'm sure they're doing it, but that was an interesting
just
thing.
Interrupt you, I've just been swiftly corrected. Somebody, Craig, has said completely wrong. Yes, you can leave a blowtorch on unattended. It's easily done.
Okay.
I still don't understand though, because you'd have to place it on something which then would... Or do you put it in a stand and it just goes,
goes? Not really a blowtorch.
Help us out, Craig.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody said total bullshit. No one is going to leave a blowtorch on and go to smoko. Just not happening. Pull the other leg. It's an insurance scam, 100%. Fletchers will be in a much better position after this fire with insurance payouts than they were paying penalty fees for being late and over cost on the project. Somebody also asked, is bitumen explosive if water added, which you've just explained. So let's get back to the science, I suppose.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's basically all I know. Other than when it burns, it creates a lot of smoke and a lot of soot, which everyone saw in the news yesterday and this morning, I guess. And those are the main hazards for people in the vicinity, you know, breathing in a lot
of... Is there toxic air?
A lot of smoke and sort of fine particulate matter in the air, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that explanation. Let's move on to our... Science, CRISPR, which is always a favourite topic.
Yes.
Read
yeah, that's right. So this is a report that we just saw in Nature, and CRISPR is this technology that has been sort of revolutionizing this field of gene editing, so changing our own DNA. And apparently there is a new method that has come to the fore. It's called prime editing, and it's supposedly more accurate and more potentially useful than this CRISPR-Cas9,
wow, okay.
I think is the original thing. And people have called it a genetic word processor. So you can rewrite, aka a word processor, the genetic code. So someone likened it to sort of pressing whatever, Control F or Command F to find a bit of genetic code and then pasting whatever the new bit in.
So now we're really talking selective.
So now we're, yeah, DNA, and apparently selective. It's much more accurate than CRISPR, much more reliable than CRISPR. So this is the latest advancement in this field of gene editing. So as you all know, I'm sure DNA is this instruction manual for building and running the body. But being able to change the DNA is transforming research. It could revolutionize medicine. But as we've already talked about several times, there are deep moral and ethical questions related to this field.
Absolutely.
For example, the Chinese babies that were gene edited earlier this year. And so a lot of the excitement has rested on this thing called CRISPR-Cas9, which was developed only 7 years ago. It scans DNA, finds the right spot, and then basically cuts the DNA. And once you've cut it, you can edit the ends and reattach them and make the changes. But the edits aren't always perfect. The cuts can end up being in the wrong place, and that's a bit of a problem. And if we're going to use this in a medical setting, so
and you wouldn't know what that would even become, right? Like a cut in the wrong place, what does that end up looking
right,
like?
Right, exactly.
When the
so that
genes
could have
develop.
All sorts of unintended consequences.
Yeah, is that like an extra finger or?
So we got six fingers. Yes, yeah, maybe. So we got this.
Who's holding up his hand?
Sorry,
yeah,
this
nobody
smoking,
can see
right,
that.
Radio be doing hand signals anyway. Keep
So we got this this new technology called prime editing, and what it does is offers much more precision and flexibility about editing the genes. So what it does, it uses a bit of genetic code that first of all finds the part of the DNA you want to edit, and then the next half of it sort of contains the change that you want to make, and it's paired with an enzyme called reverse transcriptase, which copies the relevant edits into the DNA.
So this is what we were expecting, right? We were expecting for the CRISPR, meaning as a metaphor, like the type of technology to develop, right? This is what, it was going to become more advanced, it was going to become more precise in what it can achieve and all of those things.
Yeah.
But have we developed in the sense of the discussion around the morals of this, or how we're going to
that's a whole other issue. Yeah, so this is a balance again: technology advancing, and then usually the ethics catch up. And so this is just a better technology, a sort of a step forward from what we've already had, being able to change individual letters. So there's 3 billion letters in your genetic code, and just changing a single letter out of four, A, C, G, and T, just a single letter, each represents a particular molecule, can cause disease. So, for example, a mutation that turns a specific A into a T molecule gives you sickle cell disease. So it's a common form of sickle cell disease.
Wow.
So lots of very small changes can cause
major
problems.
Okay.
So being able to do this can reverse the genetic errors, can change, can maybe cure some of these diseases.
Okay, well, continue looking out for this one.
Yeah,
I do.
No, absolutely.
Monitoring this quite closely.
This is, and I also, but I didn't include this in my notes, but there was also reports of a Russian scientist who was planning to do similar things to the Chinese scientist and put the make gene edits in unborn babies.
Okay.
And he says he's waiting for approval, but it's a big gray area.
Do you think when this when they finally nail it and they've got everything going proper and the ethics even are sorted out, would this be like this is big? This is huge, right?
Yeah,
this
is
going to be a major development in our history.
There are 75,000 different mutations that can cause diseases in people. And this has this new technique has the potential to fix nearly 90% of them.
Wow.
Which is pretty big.
Amazing. Okay, last story for today, liquid ear.
Yeah, so this is an example of sort of backyard science that actually works and has been taken up by industry. This is a plan. This is in the UK, but this is a plan to store cheap nighttime wind energy. So it's renewable energy. Store it at night by basically compressing air. So you compress air before so it forms a liquid. It's frozen. It's very cold. And then when you need energy the next day, you warm it up again. It expands. You drive a turbine, you generate electricity again. So it's a way of storing that energy.
Wow.
A very simple way, and it's completely, if you're using renewable energies to do the compressing and the cooling down, then it's completely carbon neutral. There is no problem at all environmentally.
This sounds too good to be true.
It does. I mean, it's not generating energy. It's just storing energy. So there are other techniques like this.
Would it be able to store energy that we are otherwise wasting or, you know, not taking full advantage of?
If the wind blows at night, we can harness that energy, but most of us aren't using lots of electricity at nighttime. So unless it's stored, it can be used.
Cool.
So this was done by a backyard inventor, and but it's been taken up by a company who's building a 50 megawatt plant in the north of England, and it's been supported by the UK government. And the innovation here is that when you compress the gas, it generates excess heat. It's generating some heat. So that's energy that you should probably want to store as well.
Wow.
So they're actually storing that energy and then using that heat to re-evaporate the liquid.
Wow.
When you come to use it. So it's the whole process is energy, as close to being energy neutral as possible.
Amazing.
And with this plant, it could supply electricity to 25,000 homes for a day, but more likely what it's going to be used for is just to cover short, sudden sort of peaks in demand.
Mm.
So when there's a burst, everyone,
right,
you know, half time in the Rugby World Cup final, for instance, when everyone goes off to make a cup of tea, then they'll evaporate some liquid air.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you, Marcus.
No worries.
We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
And everybody else will be back after this break with a piece from 2.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.